Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. All right, Eric, first injury report, everybody's off it. Everybody's now deemed healthy enough to play, or at least healthy enough to jet ski. All right, we head into the second week of the off season, or the second week of the Lions not being allowed to play football, or a couple of their co-teams out there still get to battle on for a few more weeks.
Very lucky.
But one big piece of business that they're working on currently is a new offensive coordinator. So Bob Quinn is brought up the other day. Patricia will make the hire. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it needs to be a Patricia guy. Quinn said he gave his opinion on people he's familiar with. And coaches that were on his, he's talked in the past about coaches, him having this list in his back pocket of potential coaches like all the time, based on him talking to people around the league and coaches he's run into and schemes he likes and whatnot. So he said he's given him a list, but who he picks is totally up to Patricia. Now, one interesting little note is that it was reported by Albert Breer in his Monday Morning Quarterback article that Coach Davidson, the offensive line coach, has been sitting in with Patricia on the offensive coordinator interviews, basically saying, we've talked in the past about how that relationship needs to be very symbiotic, and they need to be able to coexist together. So makes sense that I guess you want Davidson in if you are sticking with Davidson for the long term. So interesting wrinkle that it's Davidson and Patricia doing the interviews.
So you like Davidson sticking around? You like that idea? He's got high price free agents on the offensive line. He's got high invested draft picks on the offensive line. Offensive line wasn't great this year. Certainly wasn't a Colt offensive line.
No, it was improved, and there are some guys that are out there right now that would be very intriguing, but it sure seems that Patricia is sticking with him. So I don't think there's much argument over, can they upgrade him? I think the option might be there, but I don't think that's in their mind right now.
So we have two names. The big one that everybody was kind of excited about was Adam Gase. We kind of talked about this last week that probably wouldn't be available anyways because he's going to be a head coach somewhere else. Well, that's true. He's now the Jets head coach. Dirk Cutter was another one who's got a long history of being a offensive coordinator of well-coordinated offenses or explosive offenses. He's moved back to being the Atlanta offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and then just a little while ago, they alluded to the fact that the Bengals are planning on hiring Zach Taylor, the Rams' co-offensive coordinator, at the end of the season. So once the Rams are eliminated from the playoffs, they'll probably make that official. But that takes another, one of the candidates that we kind of had for the Lions off the table because of a head coaching opportunity.
All right, candidate's still on the table. Number one with a bullet, George Godsey, the quarterback coach.
He's definitely not their number one option.
How do we know?
No, he's not. as we've said, if he was, he'd already be in place, right? But he's still there.
It took a while for the Spartans to name Brad Salem now offensive coordinator, and he was a quarterback coach. Took weeks.
Well, I can't speak to that, but I can say I'm feeling pretty confident that Godsey is not going to be the offensive coordinator.
All right, Chad O'Shea, New England wide receivers coach, who is still working.
What's interesting about that is that McDaniels, who was rumored to be available to be a head coach, has announced that he is not up for a head coaching job.
Jeez, this guy.
And is returning back to New England. Now, O'Shea was expected last year to step into the offensive coordinator job in New England, and was put back in his place by McDaniels. Now that McDaniels is returning again, O'Shea may be looking for a big opportunity. So I really think O'Shea is more in the mix than people think, because I think he has to be itching for a job, and there's the connections there.
All right, we already talked about Zach Taylor. What about Shane Waldron, the other co-offensive coordinator for the Rams?
Yeah, I think, Zach Taylor got that interview because it's head coaching jobs. Right now, for offensive coordinator jobs, that would be almost considered a lateral move, which means you need permission from the Rams. Right now they want him focused on the playoff game, so if the Lions still haven't hired somebody by the time the Rams are eliminated, I think he's in the mix. Every time the Rams win a game, though, in these upcoming weeks, that's going to make it a little bit harder for him to be in contention for the Lions job. So I still think O'Shea probably has the inside track here.
All right, Sean Ryan, another Houston Texans quarterback coach, this time not a wait, George Godsey wasn't the quarterback's coach.
He was their coordinator.
He was their coordinator.
Yeah, you know, it's just another name. We talked about him last week. Nothing really has changed.
All right, so we got a bunch of new names that are rolling into the list, and we have a listener. Alex Stahl. He wants a one pro and one con of each of these potential hires.
Yeah, he gave me a list of three guys, and then from there, more people started asking about other guys, and so it just kind of has built from there. I'll do my best to give you one pro, one con, but I'll give you a background on some of the more heavy hitters that I think are in contention.
First is Nate Hackett, former Jaguars offensive coordinator, Bills offensive coordinator.
Yeah, so he is he was with Doug Marrone at Syracuse, which is obviously the connection, right?
Yeah.
And then they both left Syracuse to go to the Bills.
Nearby.
And then they were
easiest transition to make.
They were running the Bills for a while. Then they both left together and went to Jacksonville. And now in Jacksonville, Hackett was their quarterback's coach. Or was he the receiver? I forget which position coach he had. But their offensive coordinator they had in place was fired. Hackett stepped up in mid-2016. In 2017, he put together the number one rushing offense in the league. This year, he took a step back. And overall, they were pretty dismal in scoring points. Finished in the bottom half of the bottom quarter of the league in passing, and the bottom half of the league in running, which was a big step down from the year prior. He's a guy who relies heavily on the power run, which is something that Patricia has alluded to wanting to utilize. When he isn't power running, he's throwing the deep ball, and they're aggressive downfield, which that plays into Stafford's skill set. So Hackett has a lot of things that would appeal to what the coaches are looking for. The one problem and the one criticism I have a couple criticisms of him, is that he's not very good at making in-game adjustments, and that's something that Bob Quinn has said that he wants in an offensive coordinator. When he gets in these positions where he gets, too predictable, he kind of defaults to the run, or he doesn't alter his scheme when, giving away what his play is, especially when they're leading, it can be really problematic for them. And that predictability and not adjusting was one of the big things that hamstrung Cooter here. And so that would be a concern of mine with Hackett as well. Now, when we look at Hackett's, coaching history here, he had Blake Bortles as a quarterback, and then with the Bills, it was even worse, right? So, he's never had a quarterback like Stafford. So he's never had a quarterback that can really execute the passing game the way that he wants. So it's possible that if they do go in his direction, because he does fit the approach that they want with that kind of power run deep attack in the passing game, they could really, Stafford could help him improve in areas that he struggled in the past, because he's always had that kind of subpar quarterback play. So that predictability, though, that's always going to sit there. That's always going to be concerning with Hackett. But Hackett has been connected to the Lions today, so it'll be interesting to see if he ends up being the guy. I think he's probably very much in the mix with the guys that we just previously talked about, like O'Shea and Waldron.
People are being running those pitchforks down to Allen Park once they hire him. Very upset when they hire him. No, it's just the way it goes. I mean, look at the stats.
It will be a very uninspiring hire, yep. But he fits what they're looking for, realistically.
All right, next guy, Steve Sarkisian. Sark fired Atlanta offensive coordinator.
Now, we talked about him last week, but just briefly. And with Sarkisian, He's also been connected. He was connected today to the Lions. They said Hackett and Sarkisian are the two guys that are going to be interviewed by the Lions, right? And so with Sarkisian, we've talked about his history last week about at USC and Washington. He was offensive coordinator at Alabama for one game, right? And then he left to Atlanta to be their offensive coordinator. Last year, Atlanta's offense was 10th in points, 6th in overall yards, 4th in passing offense, and 27th in run offense. So what you get out of him is you get a guy who's more aggressive in the passing game, which is really, that again, falls in line with what you're looking for with Stafford. But he doesn't really rely on the run that often. And he actually,
although he did lose Devonta Freeman for the year, or rather early on in the season, he still had Tevin Coleman, who's a serviceable back.
Yep. And if he has a fault, though, it's going to be that he moves away from the run too quickly, which is another one of the flaws that we didn't like with Jim Bob Cooter. So he has a very aggressive approach, which would fit Stafford well. I'm not sure if it would suit what the Lions are looking for in a run game. So, in a way, Hackett and Sarkisian are almost opposites, but they both have traits that the Lions are looking for in offensive coordinators. So, and another thing that we have to keep in mind is that the front office in Atlanta is very New England heavy. They know those are guys that grew up through the New England organization with Bob Quinn. So Bob Quinn can get a call those guys and see what was the problem. And Atlanta, like your Spartans, were looking to shake things up, and they fired all their coordinators, and he was gone.
Spartans weren't looking. They didn't fire anybody. They moved everybody around.
Okay. I was trying to make an analogy.
It's a terrible analogy.
It failed horribly.
Everybody wanted him to fire the coordinator. Didn't happen.
So, but, you know, Sarkisian has a lot of flaws, but from a schematic standpoint, I think the big one's the run game. But I think, you know, he's an interesting name.
All right, Todd Monken, former Tampa Bay offensive coordinator.
So this is the Tampa Bay. The head coach goes to Atlanta, and now you've got the offensive coordinator that's sitting out there. And Monken is. He interviewed with Green Bay and the Jets for head coaching jobs. He interviewed with Cleveland for the offensive coordinator job. He's a former head coach at Southern Miss before he was in Tampa Bay. Also head coach at Oklahoma State. He had the Brandon Whedon-Blackman combination.
Justin Blackman, yep.
Yeah, that was a nice combination. Beast Funball on Twitter, he was the one who has really been harping him to me for a while, and I'm starting to like what he's telling me here. Points out that when he was at Southern Miss, the last season he was there, he had a quarterback that threw for 4,000 yards and 2,000-yard running backs.
Very explosive. That's right? Good. Almost 500 yards a game of offense.
And that translated to the Tampa Bay offense, right? Because they were 12th in points, the number one passing offense in the league last year. But you also have, they were also 29th in the run. So this is like Sarkisian is a guy who kind of veers away from the run game a little bit, but he's also aggressive on offense. So Monken and Sarkisian are a lot alike, but I don't think Monken has the off the field stuff that Sarkisian does, which is why he's very intriguing to me as well.
The next guy, you got to have a Michigan man mixed in here, Jed Fish.
Again, these are not guys I put on here.
I'm not accusing you of putting the guys on this list.
Currently, he is the senior offensive assistant with the Rams, right? He has offensive coordinator experience in the NFL. He's been with the Vikings, the Seahawks, and the Jacksonville Jaguars as offensive coordinator. He's also been an offensive coordinator at the University of Miami and University of Michigan and University of UCLA. So you'll notice there's a lot of offensive coordinator experience there, which seems very appealing, except when you look at when he was at those places, he was never at one of those places for more than 2 years. He was at Miami and Michigan for 2 years, and everywhere else, 1 year and done. All the head coaching, or all the NFL experience, 1 year, done. UCLA, 1 year, done. With the Rams, 1 year. But that's not a guy that I think is going to be appealing because there's no stability to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has some interesting points to his offenses, but I'm not interested in bringing him in as a coordinator.
All right, next up, Marcus Brady.
He's the Colts coach, quarterback coach. He was suggested to us by Defend the Den. He played in the Canadian Football League.
You're after my heart already.
He won a couple Grey Cups as a player. Then he moved into the coaching ranks, and he won the Grey Cup as a coach, as an offensive coordinator for the Toronto Argonauts.
Under Mark Trestman, former NFL head coach.
There you go. So he was their offensive coordinator for them for 5 years. This is his first year in the NFL. And that's the thing that I think is the real drawback with him is he's only been coaching the NFL game for 1 year, and that's been as a quarterback's coach.
Keep this in mind. You used to have to tell 12 guys what to do. Now he's only got to tell 11.
Right?
And you had to gain 10 more yards for every touchdown.
There's a lot that translates, of course, because there's as different as it is, it's still a similar game. But the lack of NFL experience is going to be...
He had to do it in three downs, not in four.
But it's going to be a deterrent for the Lions, sure. Is my point.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He might have a future as a coach in the NFL, but I don't think it's with the Lions at this time.
Next up, Mike McDaniel, run game coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers.
Corey Lewis asked about him. The Cardinals asked to interview him when Cliff Kingsbury said they want to interview him for the offensive coordinator position, and San Fran shut him down.
It's a step up for him.
Well, I think San Fran, usually in these situations, if San Fran is going to deny him the opportunity to have a step up like that, that they're probably going to give him a step-up promotion himself in San Francisco. So hopefully that happens for him, but it sure looks like he's not going to be interviewed outside of San Francisco.
Next up, Brian Ferentz, the Iowa offensive coordinator. Just so happens his dad is the head coach of the team.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Chris Robbins brought him up. He got his start in New England in 2009. He was with New England for 3 years doing various low-level duties, built up to be a tight ends coach. He was tight ends coach for them in 2011 when Gronk and Hernandez were dominating
Talk
the league.
Talk about a dynamic duo.
And he was their coach. He was the one that put that together. So that's a good feather in his cap. He left then and joined his dad as an offensive line coach. And so there's a lot to like as far as the run game, offensive line, tight end combination with Ferentz. But, man, I'm not sure I could see Ferentz leaving. I mean, look, when you look at Iowa's offense, they ran the ball 488 times. They passed it 408. Like, you can't do that in the NFL. It just doesn't translate like that. And maybe he'll get a chance.
Maybe he won't do that when he's in the NFL. But this is how Iowa's built. You know.
While I think he,
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, but I'm saying while he could get a chance in the NFL, I doubt he would come. He would walk in as an offensive coordinator from an offensive coordinator at college to an offensive coordinator at the NFL. Mm-hmm. Plus, how long is his dad going to stick around? You know what I mean? Could be heir apparent.
It could be a nice, easy transition into just, you know, keeping the same nameplate on the office.
Yep.
All right. Next is Notre Dame connection, Charlie Weiss.
Yeah, obviously.
New England, obvious New England connection.
Yeah. But he hasn't coached in 4 years.
John Gruden didn't coach for 10 years. He's head coach again.
But I don't know what Charlie Weiss is actually doing. I don't know if he's been involved. I know his son is coaching, which is good for him.
Shocking.
But his name was floated around a week or two ago. I'm not buying Charlie Weiss coming back. I don't think he's going to pull a Romeo Crennel, who's within Houston.
Yeah, he's in Houston, defensive coordinator in Houston.
Crennel went from defensive coordinator to the front office, then back to defensive coordinator when Vrabel left. And so I don't think Weiss has that.
Got that happening in Denver right now, too. Gary Kubiak coming out of the front office, going back to being the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I don't think Weiss has that sustainability.
All right, and another big one, and I know that he's got a community.
Yeah.
Here in the NFL, in the internet world. But a lot of people will be upset if Dan Orlovsky's the offensive coordinator for the Lions.
Yeah, you know, right now he's got a nice cushy gig at ESPN, and he's headed places. And every time he goes on an ESPN show, people rave about him. He's going to get paid at some point, he's going to be paid to be a broadcaster or an analyst, the same money he would be paid to be a quarterback's coach or offensive coordinator in the league. And he would have to have a passion to come back to coaching, where I don't think he needs to. You know, he's got a big family. He can be with his family with the job he has. If he's a coach, that goes away. He's got a lot
20 hours a day.
He's got a lot of young kids at home. And so, look, last year he was offered a job by Caldwell, and he turned it down. So, looking at Orlovsky and where he is and where his priorities are, I can't imagine that he would want to be an offensive coordinator, just unless the passion is really there for it. I just think he's in a nice spot. He's got a nice future ahead of him with ESPN right now.
Hail Mary writes, as we await the hiring of the new offensive coordinator, what do you think the three most important qualities that would make a good candidate for the position?
All right, so I put Bob Quinn's press conference quote, and I want to see if we can, like, dissect a thing or two out of this. So Bob Quinn, when asked this question, said, "We're looking for someone that improves the offense." That's fine. I think we want a balanced attack, like we've talked about before. We want to be able to run the ball, and we want to be able to use our quarterback because he has a ton of talent. So we want to be diverse. We're not going to sit there with four wide receivers and shotgun every play and throw it 45 times. That's not good for anybody. And on the other hand, we're not going to be in three tight end sets running the ball 40 times. Wow. He preaches balance, right? And if we look back at these guys and we look at who has balance, you don't really get that from Sarkisian. You don't really get that from Monken. Now, again, Monken, as you pointed out, was down a running back, which hurts his case. Hackett, if anything, he leans more towards the run, but he's more balanced out of the new names on this list. But O'Shea, go back to the New England coach, O'Shea, we don't know what he can do. But if you look at the system that he's been in, and if he's going to produce, you know, the expectation is that he's the next Josh McDaniels, that's a more balanced offense. So when you look at what Quinn says, and you look at what they're talking about needing, it sure seems like it's down to either O'Shea or Waldron or Hackett, in my mind.
Wow.
That's my kind of gut.
All right. Well, that's going to be interesting to see if that's the direction they headed. Next question is from Brett Cousineau. With little news about the Lions' offensive coordinator interviews, do you think it's likely that they're not only looking in-house, or are they waiting for a team, such as the Patriots, to get eliminated to talk to their staff? Well, you already answered that question. Yes.
Yeah.
Waldron and O'Shea.
Yeah. You know, they can talk to Hackett and Sarkisian. They haven't been connected to Modkin yet, but I do think that that's a name that's out there. But I do think they're waiting. I do think they're waiting on Waldron and O'Shea.
Detroit Sports Nation, who's Don, asks, who would your number one choice to become the Detroit Lions' next offensive coordinator? Who would use Stafford correctly?
Well, that's the $6 million question, right?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, if Eric nails this one, he should be Bob Quinn.
I think Hackett probably makes the most sense of the guys that are available. But if Hackett isn't hired this week, then it probably is going to be O'Shea. That's my guess. So if I'm going to pick a guy, I'm going to say that guy is O'Shea. But they might not be willing to wait. They might not be able to wait. And they might end up being blown away by Hackett, who they're familiar with. And they might end up settling on him. A lot of the writers think Hackett has the front, like, kind of lead for the job right now. And that could very much be true. I just think O'Shea brings something to the team. It would be difficult to bring in O'Shea because he doesn't have the experience that is probably required, but he's been in that New England system and been in waiting for now a couple of seasons, so I'm going to lean O'Shea right now.
Now, I sit here and I'm looking at these names, and I'm not as deep as this, you know, when it comes to knowing all these guys. I know a lot of the names, and I usually know more about remember their playing career more than their coaching career. The thing is, though, I'm not excited about any one of these names. Maybe sure. That's a good thing. You know, maybe instead of making a big splash, they just get a guy that just happens to fit, you know, and we'll see what happens. You know, the cynic in me says, well, they're not going to do that. And we'll just see. But none of these choices seem very enticing at all to me.
I think this team needs some experience. And that's why I think Hackett is probably the leading candidate. O'Shea's the one that just appeals to me the most. Waldron would appeal to me, too. I just think O'Shea makes more sense.
Oh, no, I was kind of lying. I do know Charlie Weiss and Steve Sarkisian's antics really well. All right, Eric J. Masson. The question is, or Masson, do you think Patricia wants to make Lions a New England West team? Well, yes, with complementary football, ball control, efficient offense, and defense. Or become a dominant defensive team like last year's Bears, Ravens, as well as recent Super Bowl teams like the Broncos and Seahawks. Or just work with what talent they acquire and develop the best recipe possible. Seems the best coaching works with the talent you acquire, maximizes it, and build depth to deal with injuries. Belichick's early Super Bowl teams were more defensive with complementary offense, and as of late, more dominant offense with complementary defense.
So, what is he trying to build, right? That's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the question here is, and while I don't think he's necessarily trying to be New England West, I don't think he's trying to build a dominant defense. I think he wants to have a strong defense because that's where Patricia's, you know, skill sets are. That's where he's most comfortable. But I think he would like to have balance. It's just, and I think he would like to be able to adjust. I think that's the plan. I just don't know if he's capable of doing that. He has, right now, we don't have an offensive play caller. And until we know who that offensive play caller is and what they're capable of, it's hard to say that they're willing to adjust to the talent. That's the concept that they want. They want to be able to do that, but I don't know if they're capable just yet.
All right, the OC hire is critical. If the Lions' offense and record is worse next year, is Patricia highly likely to be gone, or is highly likely to be gone? Could it happen maybe before the end of the season?
What do you think?
I would say no.
Okay.
Because, like, Quinn and Patricia, they might, you know, they're in this together. You know, they're buddy-buddy. If they just stick together and they just think about how the previous regime handled business, they might not fire us. Let's just stick it out. We're not going anywhere. I'm not going to fire you. They might keep us both, and we'll be all right.
I think in order for Patricia to get fired mid-season, it would also require Bob Quinn
getting
fired.
2-6. Yeah, you'd have to go to...
They'd have to go like 0-8. Yeah. Like, and then
1-7, 0-8.
Yeah. Both of them would have to be gone.
Sure. Oh, that would be fun. Like, I'm not rooting for that because I want to see this team win. Yeah. But when something like that happens...
What a mess. What a mess that would be.
Gigantic mess.
Because let's say your coordinators...
Rooting for chaos.
Let's say your coordinators are O'Shea and Pasqualoni.
Well, Pasqualoni becomes head coach.
What a nightmare that would be.
Yeah, he's been a head coach before. Oh. All they got to do is steer the ship for 8 games, you know, and the players will handle business. It's a business. I would assume everything would be, you know, okay. They'd end up 2-14 if they started 0-8.
So to get back to the question, I don't think he'll be fired midseason. I do think, though, that if they have a terrible showing, finish worse than they do this year, it could be... Both of them get hacked.
Sure. Fred Galetsky, what are your thoughts on the offensive coordinator and advisory role working from the booth and let Nine call his own plays based on his veteran leadership and truly put the ball in his hands? I believe this is why we thought Joe Lombardi would be so great, but it was actually Breeze's execution. I don't know if that was because Lombardi was his last name. That's why we thought he'd be great. And then we thought Jim Bob Cooter would be great because he had a funny name.
Well, I think he's right. I think a lot of, from personally, I looked at what he did in New Orleans and I thought, wow, that's impressive. And
yeah, sure. This makes a lot of sense.
I thought, yeah, it did. It made a lot of sense.
At the time.
Yeah, absolutely. But it didn't work like that. And I don't think you could turn this over to Stafford, especially when you're talking about implementing a new scheme, right? And so, but I do think you need to be able to give Stafford some leeway. I think if you're handcuffing Stafford and not allowing him to make adjustments, then you're limiting what he can do. I think you need to loosen the reins on him a little bit.
Defend the den. We've been so focused on who will be the new offensive coordinator, we just spent 30 minutes on it. What do you think do you think the Lions will bring in a new defensive coordinator and move Pasqualoni to a defensive assistant role?
I still think that's a possibility that he would be moved not to a defensive assistant, but he would be moved to a advisory role like in the front office. I still think that's a possibility. But really, Patricia wants a puppet that he knows, and that's what Pasqualoni is right
now. Well, it's Pasqualoni. You're around. So you seem invigorated. That defense moved up the charts as the season moved on. Why wouldn't he want to hang around and see where he could get this unit? Actually, sure. Patricia, but he's just the guy standing there.
Yep. No, I still think it's an option. I don't foresee it happening right now, though.
All right, we're going to switch over to the front office and coaching staff. We spent a minute on defensive coordinator. First, the capologist, Matt Harris, the current capologist, out and in. It's Mike Disner,
who was Arizona's capologist. And he is a Bloomfield Hills native. He got his start in New England in 2007. Actually, he was an intern in 2005 and 6. So he was around right in that same time that Bob Quinn was, when he was coming up through the front office in New England. He is a guy who is now did a nice job in Arizona, and they're bringing him over back into the fold and pairing him up with John Dykema, who's the team's lead counsel, and these guys are going to manage the money in the front office.
So just
a technical move.
Brandon Kerr. Every time we get a new coaching staff or administration, the media goes on and on about changing the culture in Detroit. I know it means winning, but do you see this being the case now more than before? And I think Martha Ford is new ownership compared to William Clay Ford.
I think she is. I know that we've debated on this before, but sure. I think anytime you bring new people in, you're always talking, changing culture. But yeah, bottom line is it comes to, when you win, all that culture talk goes out the window. So that's the bottom line.
Well, that's the winning culture.
Right. Yeah. Win and
right into winning culture.
You got it.
Next steps from the roster. Lyle. What's the number one feel-good story of 2018? Hand, Zenner, Johnson, Galloway, or Snacks, or another option?
What do you think?
I'm going to guess. To me, it's because the guy broke his back. It's Zenner. You break your back and you're gone for 8 weeks, sure. And then you come back. And that's probably not the right answer. I guess Galladay's a good story because he's finally starting to emerge. Everybody's been waiting for that talent to blossom, and it finally did.
Sure. I debated between Snacks because I think really he was such a great player before coming to Detroit and then elevated it even more. But I'm going with Hand. I think going from a fourth-round pick to basically being one of the best defensive rookies in the league.
That was a great move. He's a good player.
It's such a great story. And when you get to know him, he's a really good kid. I really like what I've gotten to know from him. I really like his future, and I'm excited to see where it goes. So I would say Hand's really got the coolest story right now.
All right, next up we're going to talk about the draft pick, which currently sits at 8. It's not really going to move unless they trade it. First, we're going to mention scouting the Alliance of American Football League. We were discussing this earlier today, or maybe yesterday. It was yesterday.
Yeah.
We were just talking about the ex-Lions that are finding themselves planted on AAFL rosters.
All over them.
Yeah, oh yeah, but we have... At least I have a favorite team already at this point, although I don't like the quarterback situation, but we'll have to see how the season rolls along. Maybe Eric won't watch any of the games, but I know I'm dumb enough to sit down and watch a few of them. First, we got the San Diego Fleet, and they are filled with ex-Lions, Alex Barrett, Al-Rashid Benton, who was really just in training camp.
Yeah.
Dontez Ford, and my guy Bo Nunn, as well as John Montellus.
Yep.
I hope Bo Nunn starts for the Fleet. What if he doesn't start for the Fleet? You know, how funny, how bad's that going to be? I will guarantee Bo Nunn will make one start for the Fleet this season. All right? I got 8 more games.
Nice. Mark it down.
Or 6 more games, or however many they're playing. 10 games?
You know, the other names are neat. Fourier's on the Arizona team.
Yeah, Joseph Fourier.
Coupland, the Osprey, who was a camp favorite, is on the Orlando team. Asiata, who was with us for a year at Salt Lake, and Chase Ferris, who was with us for a year before getting poached off our practice squad, is in Atlanta, as is Denard Robinson.
Denard!
Who I, not a Lions tie, but a local tie.
Yeah, well, we all know Denard. Yeah, I hope he's successful there. Maybe he'll find his way back onto an NFL roster. He is getting older.
But yeah, I guess we're going to have to adopt the San Diego Fleet.
You don't have to. I can be the lone fleet man on
this
podcast.
We're in this together.
So this is now the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast and the San Diego Fleet Breakdown Podcast.
Hype train.
We will, yeah, we'll just a hype train. We're not going to break down their games or anything. We're only going to mention if Bo Nunn plays. And the thing is, like, after their first game, they won't be televised. We can't figure out who played in the game. And then we just won't even talk about it. And then everybody will have to start writing again.
Until he ends up in training camp again.
Daniel Cornell. I heard Bob talking about the trade value of the number 8 pick. Do you think the Lions will trade back? I bet the hope is they will, and I'm pretty sure they won't be able to.
Yeah,
that's usually what happens to almost every team.
We talked about this last week. They're in a bad spot with two quarterback needy teams ahead of them. I don't know if they'll be able to trade back unless something phenomenal really happens.
All right, Robo. Everyone is talking about the draft, but is there a possibility that first-round pick is traded during free agency? And what or who do you think is worth that pick?
It would be very odd to see it
traded for a who.
Yeah, it would. I mean, it would be like
that
would
be something. What they
hey,
get.
We'll give you a first round pick in Antonio and Marvin Jones for Antonio Brown type of stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
What's it worth? I don't know. Look, we've got Jimmy Johnson's draft chart.
Yeah, I love the old draft chart.
And then
the numerical value to all the picks.
I actually have an updated one that I use now. But yeah, we'll get into that value of the pick a little bit as we get closer, I think.
All right, so wait, what are the ramifications of the third round pick from Tate's trade? What will happen if the Eagles lose or win this weekend with that pick?
So if the Eagles lose, they get the 25th pick in the third round. But if the Eagles win, could be the 28th, the 31st, or the 32nd, depending on how far they go.
So let's go Saints.
Right? And, honestly, the difference between the 25th pick in the third round and the 32nd pick in the third round is really not that huge.
It's the razor margin of winning a Super Bowl and being out of the playoffs for the next 4 years.
But, yeah, if they win or if they lose, yeah, though, I mean, it's not that significant.
Ed Matthews, there's a lot of talk about how bad this quarterback class is, but they always end up going high in the draft anyway. You nailed that one. What do you think the chances are that three quarterbacks get taken before the Lions pick at 8?
Three would be huge because it would mean that
somebody's giving up on their guy.
Somebody is trading. Well, or somebody is trades jumping up ahead as well. Yeah, because right now the Giants and the Jaguars need quarterbacks, and that's it. And they need someone else to jump up ahead of those two. And then the Giants and the Jaguars would
still
also have to stick there. Right? Yeah. So I think it would be very hard to see three go. I think two could go. I think one will go for sure. But I think three is a bit of a stretch.
Is this draft deep enough at edge rusher that the Lions can address another need in the first round and still land a big impact player? Oh. They did less than that this year because that was kind of the feeling. It's like, well, they're going to, we need an edge rusher. Everybody wants Landry.
Right.
Yeah, Harold Landry.
Yep.
And, they end up taking Rag. I was like, oh, well, they got to use a second round pick. And they got Kerryon Johnson as an excellent pick. And we don't end up picking a defensive lineman who's not even an edge rusher until you get Deshaun Hand.
Right. And this edge class is deeper. So, you could probably get a guy after the first round. But I've talked about my edge rules before. And just to clarify that one more time. With the edge position, the bust rate drops as your pick drops. The higher the pick, the higher the success rate of your edge guys. So if you can get an edge guy at 8, the chances of that guy being a success are statistically and historically very high. The longer you wait, the more the bust rate goes up on these edge guys. It's very cyclical with these guys. They match very perfectly, right? So if you get a chance to take an edge guy at 8, you got a chance, a very high probability of getting a stud. So, yes, you can wait, but the difference between a first-round edge and a second-round edge, even though it's a deep class and a good class, there's a gamble aspect, but you're also going to get a big drop in production.
All right, next up, Freddie Bello, who's better known as Freddie the Pizza Man. Who is the top-rated tight end on your board, E?
I haven't settled on it yet. Right now, I tentatively have Noah Fant from Iowa as my top guy.
Oh, Hockenson from Iowa?
Hockenson is also from Iowa.
Well, both Iowa
He's
guys.
My number two. Irv Smith is my number three.
From Alabama. Now,
and so those guys, there might be a little bit of fluctuation. And I wouldn't be surprised if Hockenson moves ahead of Noah Fant for me and ends up being the number one. But Hockenson hasn't even declared yet. So if he declares, he might end up being my tight end one. Right now, though, those Iowa guys are at the top of my list with a bullet.
Hockenson in a nice bowl game. All right, between the numbers, Christian Jones, he started more games this year than last with Chicago, but his stat production was lower. Signed through 2019, but is he good enough? Is an inside linebacker an overlooked need to pair with Davis? Devin White and Davis could bring elite speed to that group playing behind Snacks and A'shaun.
So Devin White, don't look at that list, Joe, because I want you to guess
it. I'm not looking at the
Thank
list.
Thank you. So Devin White is, he's basically Jared Davis in my mind, right? He's a guy who is incredibly athletic, very aggressive, but that he can be over-aggressive and misread his cues because of his over-aggressiveness. So putting them together would be very fun, but it would also be very scary because they would
very have, upsetting to a lot of
they,
Lions fans.
They would have the same problems.
Blow up on plays.
I don't think he's good enough to go at, or in, as far as the Lions and what their needs are and as him as a player, I don't think his value is there at 8. I also don't think he'll be around at 43 when they pick in the second round. So I don't think he's really in that frame where they're going to be have a chance to take him. I think if you're looking for a linebacker, you're probably hoping Devin Bush falls to 43. He would be a very nice fit with Davis. But I do think it could be a sneaky need, but I do think Christian Jones is also being a little bit undervalued here. When I broke down the numbers,
Eric didn't like him at first.
I didn't. But when you look at the numbers, Jared Davis played almost every snap out there, right? He doesn't leave the field. Devin Kennard and Jack plays pretty much every snap out there. The third linebacker spot is only on the field about 60 to 65% of the time. They don't utilize that second off-the-ball linebacker a whole lot. He's not an every-down player. He's a two-thirds player. Mm-hmm. And so while that's important...
2 years ago, it was less than that.
Well, and while that's... But again, you got to remember, it's a, you also have an extra defensive line. Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at guys that are going to be on the field... You've got an edge guy that's going to be on the field almost 100% of the time. You got a tight end who's going to be on the field almost 100% of the time. A cornerback that's going to be on the field almost 100% of the time. You need these guys ahead of this guy that's going to be on the field for two-thirds. And that's only if you can get a guy that can upgrade on Christian Jones. So while I don't think the off-the-ball linebacker is going to be one of the top like three needs on this team, I do think if they have a chance to upgrade, they will. Like if, for example... If C.J. Mosley from Baltimore hits free agency and they want to pay the money, pay him. That would be crazy to put Davis and Mosley together. That would be phenomenal. But I think if it gets to the draft, I don't think they're going to be looking to take a guy like Devin White in the first round because the value isn't there for the amount of snaps that that position plays. All right, so I told you my top three: edge, tight end, corner. Do you have a different, like, where are your hierarchy here? Do you have
a hierarchy? Well, edge would be number one with a bullet. They have to improve the pass rush.
Right.
Starting corner every year, no matter what team you are, starting corner is one of your three biggest positional needs. Every team. Go ahead.
That's probably true. I was going to say, do you think tight end or corner is more important?
Well, I'll say corner.
Okay.
But we don't even know who the offensive coordinator is,
sure.
So I'll say corner.
Yeah.
And then I would say tight end, because tight end's going to be important because every team's going to run a tight end. Once again, he's not looking to run four wide receivers and a running back.
Yep.
But I'll still put corner ahead of tight end at this very second.
Here's where it gets tricky. After this, there's a lot of question marks because, again, we don't know what the offensive coordinator is going to be. We don't know the status of Glover Quinn. We don't know the status of T.J. Lang. But if you had to put a number four value on something, like – Where would your number four...
Third wide receiver.
Okay. All right. Mine, I put mine fifth. My fourth was, I said, they need a second running back.
Okay.
You got to remember
how... You got Zach Zenner. I know. Is he unsigned?
He is unsigned. But even if he is signed, in my mind...
They can do better.
They can do better. And they need to do better. And they need a better version of LeGarrette Blount, in my mind. And when you look at what Quinn has said, and when you look at what Patricia's... What they both said at the end of the year conferences, they want to run the ball. And Kerryon is not built to be a guy that you give the ball to 75% of plays. He's just not. He's just, Kerryon's great.
Well, I love him. Sure. No, I don't really think that many NFL backs, even right. NFL backs that are built like this, shouldn't be used like that.
There's like five backs like that in the whole NFL. And so you have to have a complement to Kerryon. And Theo's a specialist.
Yeah, he's Zenner, a play.
Zenner has a role, but in my mind, he's a reserve. He's not a one or a two. And so that you got to have that RB2. And in my mind, that RB2, especially if you're valuing tight end as the third receiving option, if you got Kenny and Marvin and then you got a tight end, you got, I think, Kerryon, and then you might even say that second running back is more important than that slot guy. That slot role might get diminished quite a bit depending on who the coordinator is. That's just my opinion. All right, well, I got an article out that lists 10 more after that. So we can address
just
these
about addressing every player
as we
team.
Get closer. So specific rules after that. So let's keep knocking these out.
All right, Steven Petuna, you've mentioned how well Deontay Thompson would potentially fit in Patricia's defensive scheme, and I myself was an advocate for taking him at 8, depending on how the board fell. After his less than stellar college football playoff performance, how much have you cooled off on him, if at all? You shouldn't let one game make all these decisions.
Yep, there you go. That's what I was going to say. Hey, look, I get it. It's a national stage. People are looking at him. People are watching. It's high-level competition.
They played a stink bomb out
there.
Who would have
thought? The whole Alabama defense. Almost everyone except Quinnen laid a stink bomb. So I'm okay. I haven't really soured on him much at all.
Daniel Reese, if Isaiah Simmons comes out, how good of a fit would he be for Matty P's D?
He would be Miles Killebrew. And Miles Killebrew, but here's what I mean by Miles Killebrew. Miles Killebrew got the option to try and win a safety job and couldn't, so they were forced to move him to linebacker and then special teams. If they brought in a guy like Simmons, he would take over Tavon Wilson's role in my mind.
If the Lions are to go with a cornerback at 8, which of Greedy, DeAndre, Trayvon, and Murphy would you prefer?
I haven't settled on one. I'm leaning Murphy right now, even though he's the one that doesn't seem to be the best scheme fit. I like Byron Murphy from Washington.
Kyle Klein, if the Lions don't address cornerback in free agency or the draft, would you like to see the Lions trade for Jalen Ramsey in a preseason deal?
I think...
For what?
Well, I think they're more likely future to trade picks. For Patrick Peterson than they would be for Ramsey.
Still future draft.
That's my guess, yeah.
All right, Craig Medeiros... would you consider Jonah Williams, move Decker to right tackle, and release Wagner?
No.
I would.
But. I wouldn't. I mean, look.
I don't like Wagner.
If you don't like Wagner, then cut Wagner and promote Crosby. Mm. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
that's fair.
You don't need to sign. You don't need to draft Williams to do that move. If you want to do that move, you got a guy in-house.
Moving on to free agency, Golden Delicious asks, do you think Ansa is 100% gone, or might the Lions bring him back on another franchise tag?
Wow. I think he's gone. I think if you franchise him, you have to...
$24 million.
You've got to add 25%, yeah. So there's franchise is not an option. It would be your whole cap. Unless they sign him for a ridiculously cheap deal, he's gone.
Keith, will Quinn, Lang, and Ansa come back in 2019? Well, we already know one of them.
Quinn and Lang are big question marks. I think both of them are very susceptible. Oh, wow.
Susceptible.
I'm drooling here. I think they are very much retirement watch guys. So I don't know. I can't – when it comes to retirement and like that at the end of the season, it'd be ignorant of me to think that I could make that projection, unfortunately.
BZ Ski. Any free agent that you think the Lions will break the bank for? Clowney or Barr or C.J. Mosley? Well, you kind of mentioned Mosley. I would personally target safety Landon Collins with Matt Patricia preference to play three safeties. Diggs, Collins, and Walker would look very nice on the field at the same time.
Yeah, I get the appeal of Collins. For me, if I'm going to really spend the money, C.J. Mosley makes a lot of sense, like we just talked about. I don't see them spending money on Clowney. I don't think Barr is going to be worth it. I don't know if they're going to break the bank, to be honest with you. I think the hopes of getting Mosley and Landon Collins is probably just us hoping. I don't think it's realistic.
All right, back to Eric Masson again. Anthony Barr, a fit in Detroit as pass-rushing linebacker. Don't think Minnesota has cap room to re-sign him. Is there a better fit? C.J. Mosley from the Ravens, though I think they have the cap room to keep him. Would love an edge in the draft, but think you use free agency to set roster, draft, and
best player available.
Best player available.
Yeah. You. They're going to set their roster in free agency, that's for sure. And while Barr fits, I think he fits as in Kennard's role. So if you're going to bring in Barr, you got to move Kennard. And I don't know if that would be worth it for what they're trying to do. So I don't know if Barr is as good of a fit as people would want it to be. Again, we talked about Mosley.
Dustin Blackwell, we already talked about this too. Any possibility the Lions try to trade for Antonio Brown? And should they? You know, they got a couple of minutes.
I don't think they should. I don't know if
I mean, if he hates Pittsburgh, he's going to hate it here.
That's my point. Yeah, right? That's the thing, is I don't think he would be happy here. Even though he played at Central and he's, you know, familiar with the area, I don't know if he would coexist in this locker room
very well. All right, we're going to hit one of these NFL questions.
All right.
Big biting pig. I think the NFL should adopt a, quote, no punting rule for overtime games and switch it back to sudden death. Games would be over fast, which the NFL would like, and it doesn't make it a no-brainer anymore that coaches automatically receive the ball if they win the coin toss. Thoughts? Wait, why wouldn't you want the ball?
I don't know. I was going to defer to you on
that. Okay, because I would. I mean, you'd still want to get the ball. Who's going to kick?
Right.
Yeah, because sudden death, all you got to do is get into field goal range.
Correct.
To win the game.
I don't know if I like the sudden death part. I do like the no punting part, though.
I do like the no punting part. I also kind of sit in the universe where it would be interesting if, like, the AFC banned punting. Like, in Major League Baseball, you know, with the designated hitter rule. But it's like in the NFL, the NFC teams play the game that we all know well, and the AFC teams can't punt on fourth down. They got to go for it every time.
Maybe the AFC can, but they can only their quarterbacks can punt.
That would be a good idea, too, because there's also that talk going around that these automatic kickers, although Cody Parkey showed otherwise on Sunday, the kicker should be one of the guys on the team. It should be a guy who plays in down and distance situations.
Sure. Well, I mean,
and then it's actually less on them when they miss the kicks because everybody's like, well, he's not some specialist. He's just the guy we put out there to kick.
I think they've changed the rules, though, to make those specialists very important.
Well, you know, sure. Yeah, well, that's what the game's all about. The whole game, the whole Pittsburgh-Chicago game came down to that kicker being a specialist, you know? Right.
Well, technically it was blocked, but,
you know. No, well, all right, yeah. Regardless of what ended up, well, then you should have kicked it higher. So got a better trajectory when he contacted the football.
Fun note, the Lions had 9uprights hit during the season.
Yeah, then they showed 4 of them in the playoffs.
Right. I'm just wondering if maybe the Lions had a contract with the goalpost for 10. They had an extra one. They just waited to use it.
They had a lot of bad juju out there. And it kept getting used up there in Soldier Field.
All right.
Save this last question for next week. I want you to answer it next week. Even though we touched on it in the beginning of the year, and I think it's just been proven.
Yeah. All right. Special thanks to Ed Matthews. He asked some questions. Our guy in Louisiana here. He gave us a nice review, as did
Eskimo 20.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is the other Eskimo that follows me on Twitter here, but thank you to you guys. We're up to 116, so we continue to roll with those ratings and reviews. Appreciate that a lot. And we're just going to keep rolling. I know we spent a lot of time on your questions. We're going to try to knock out all the mailbag, and hopefully we can start getting into some more detailed roster stuff next week.
Next week, hopefully, we're talking about the new offensive coordinator, not for 30 minutes about who could be the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, no kidding. We probably need half that to talk about who the guy actually is.
Yep. So until next week, everybody enjoy this weekend of playoff football, and let's go Lions.